Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I said, the sad reality is, you know, Democrats are failing to lead in this moment. And looking for the Republicans to bail them out, I think it's a fool's errand, to be honest. This idea that Republicans need to get out of the way. No, you need to push them out of the way. If they're going to be the obstructionists, you got to get them out of the way. You can't wish and hope. It's not going to happen. You got to mobilize and act. That simple. And sadly, we're just not seeing the mobilization and the acting. We're seeing a lot of finger pointing, a lot of waving, but not a lot of pointy elbows. As my eighth grade basketball coach always said, God gave basketball players elbows for a reason. You put them out there, and so when someone gets an elbow in the chops, they never go back after the ball like that again. And it's the same thing that Democrats better figure out, and they better figure it out quick. And here to share some thoughts on, well, where we are after a day off from Facebook and all of the other craziness that came out today, I've asked our good friend Jeff Hauser to come talk with us. Jeff is the executive director of the Revolving Door Project there at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. The revolvingdoorproject.org is their website. Jeff, thanks for taking time for us.
I love to be here.
So a day off from Facebook. Was it a good day? Did you miss anything?
I actually spent more time thinking about Facebook today than normally. I mean, I think about them as a corporation whose influence in Washington must be fought tooth and nail. But as we were kind of discussing a little bit right before we went on live, I don't go to Facebook much anymore. Honestly, actually, since they went to the algorithm, which is like 12 years ago, but instead of, you know, just giving me a random sampling of what my actual friends are saying, they give me the stuff that they creepily predict I want to see, and it just doesn't work for me. Like, that's not how my brain thinks. They, for better or for worse, they don't actually understand my brain, which, you know, maybe that's to their credit, but I don't really like Facebook. But obviously, the big story, the big public policy implication of Facebook being down is also WhatsApp was down and Instagram was down. And WhatsApp and Instagram are two distinct brands, but they are companies that were purchased a decade ago by Facebook because they saw incipient competition and they decided we are going to take out our competition before the competition takes us out. And so when Facebook goes down, it brings down their ostensible competitors as well, because they're not really competitors. They're the same company. And so ironically, just as the Facebook was responding to the Federal Trade Commission's lawsuit in court today, their reality was proving that they are a vastly too large company that needs to be broken up.
Yeah. Do you think that was by design? Do you think that something nefarious happened? Or is it just, you know, the fate of the gods and the moons aligning and all of that stuff?
I don't know. I know there are lots of different theories out there. Obviously, there is a whistleblower who appeared on 60 Minutes last night after having provided a wealth of material to the Wall Street Journal in the last couple of weeks. And there's obviously dissatisfaction within Facebook about that the company is not what they signed up for. Facebook hires a lot of talented people. They're not talented at all things, and they shouldn't be running the world, but they are like getting to choose some really talented people. And I think some of those people are beginning to seriously regret the decisions that they made to go work at Facebook. And I think that internal threat to Facebook is very real, just like renewed antitrust enforcement would also be a very real threat.
Yeah, you know, I look at this, Jeff, and, you know, I remember it's been several months back now, where there was a push to get Facebook and Google on the UN. And you go, why do we want private corporations on the UN? Because they do such a nice job of democracy, right?
Yeah, I mean, there was a piece I read in The Atlantic recently that compared Facebook to basically being like a country, and it views itself that way increasingly. They've hired people to be an oversight board, kind of like a judicial Supreme Court for Facebook. They're a very weird entity, and I'd like them, to the extent to which I want them to exist at all, or they are forced to, I'd like them to be a run-of-the-mill corporation, maybe different in that maybe they should actually pay taxes, which so many corporations don't. But I'd like them to just be ground down to size and not be a behemoth astride the planet. They should just listen to the rules like everyone else, which is not Mark Zuckerberg's inclination, but I think it should be ours.
No, I'm right there with you. And, you know, for me, the whole idea of, you know, most people don't realize there's this algorithm that pushes them content that Facebook wants them to see. And, you know, maybe not stuff that's indicative of what their friends are saying. Because at the beginning, if I remember right, it was just a timeline. When someone would post something, it would go up and you would scroll through and you'd go, hey, you know, 2 hours ago, someone said this. 4 hours ago, someone said this. It was just a kind of a running thing. Instead, now I keep getting, you keep getting hit with the same kind of things that you go, I don't want any of this. And I don't know. I keep going, I don't know who is reading my mind, but I'll have Googled something and all of a sudden, well, that's odd. That's there too.
Yeah. I mean, so Google and Facebook through a variety of mechanisms are basically tracking you almost everywhere you are on the internet, unless you go to considerable lengths, which you can look up some of the things. I haven't done actually all of the ones I should probably, but unless you go to pretty significant lengths, on the internet, you are being tracked. You're being surveyed in like in a surveillance sense. And some people are like, well, it doesn't really matter. These are corporations, not the government. But I kind of think Google and Facebook are powerful enough that them conducting surveillance on people is really not any better than it being done by the government. So yeah, they know. They think they know you. Their algorithm, which is not an artificial intelligence of its own, it's designed by people and constantly tinkered with by human engineers, that is guiding decisions. And it's not a great system, but it is a system that allows them to hire very few human beings and run a very large company. And they think it maximizes the amount of time on their site, which they can then monetize.
Yep.
And it's crazy. And
That was the big headline, though, wasn't it, Jeff, that this whistleblower came out and said, gee, you know, they're not so much concerned about, you know, all of those high-minded things. It's about the money. Oh, gee, it's a corporation pursuing its own profitable interests. Shock of shocks.
Yeah, I mean, what I think has happened with Silicon Valley is interesting in that there was so much venture capital money to support incipient corporations that it was more important to companies for their first several years of existence, for longer than any other time in history, to build scale without building growth and profits. So they actually really were not worried about making money. They often lost money. But because they convinced investors that they would eventually build a monopoly that they would be able to turn into money, they basically just needed to grow. They didn't need to make money. Remember, like companies like Uber still do not make money. Amazon has only recently become profitable and mostly was a break-even operation for a very long time, even as it was ascending to levels of, you know, $1.5-2 trillion. So in this environment in which the capital markets are willing to invest in the future profits without seeing current profits, Silicon Valley decided to compete for the most talented people in the world. And the most talented people in the world, one of the ways to convince them to come work for you, and again, this is talented in a very narrow sense. I'm not like saying these are the best people or anything, but the narrow sense of talent that they were competing for, they had to use all this rhetoric about how they were going to make the world a better place, because that was necessary to attract the type of people who could help them build this massive, giant, too large corporation, which is like destroying the world now. And I think some of the people have like continued to drink the Kool-Aid, and other people who work there are really dissatisfied because they bought into it. They really thought that they were going to a company that was very different than like a Goldman Sachs. For a while, Silicon Valley was competing with Wall Street for academically gifted people and winning. And they were doing it by saying, we're kinder and gentler. And honestly, I think at this point in time, you can make a real argument that Facebook is a greater threat to the world than Goldman Sachs, which I do not say out of any affinity for Goldman Sachs.
No, I know that. And I agree with you because both are just as bad. Because I look at the other side of this. You've got, you know, the kind of monopoly that Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp and all that has. And then you look at the other side of Wall Street and the kind of monopoly that they've got. And now we see these Pandora papers of the uber wealthy across the globe stashing money all over the place and have been doing it for decades. And, you know, I said, look, you know, every couple of years we see this come up where we wake up to the reality that rich people are robbing us blind, and we get upset with it for about 6 minutes, and then it goes away. Why is this going to be any different? Why is this moment going to be any different? Or do you think it will be?
I mean, I think the key thing to always remember is that we as a people, broadly speaking, have agency. So I don't think it's predetermined. Obviously, if you're a betting person and you're looking at the last, you know, couple of decades, every time there is a reason to be outraged at rich people and there isn't much of a response or an adequate response, you could come away thinking that we're all doomed to repeat it in the future. And that's definitely possible. I'd like to think that we have agency. Like, that's kind of what we do at Revolving Door Project, is try to think about a source of potential fixes that is the powers that exist within the executive branch of the government. We're not talking about passing new laws, but enforcing old laws. We like to think that if you did that better, you could make the world less unfair. And so that if you think about this in the context of the Pandora Papers and how rich people evade taxes and other laws, there are some new laws that would need to be written, but there are other bad laws that would need to be enforced better. We would need to allocate more people in the government to the task of white-collar criminal enforcement. I mean, white-collar crime is a massive problem in this country. It is economically expensive in the sense of taxes. It is physically expensive in the sense of people dying prematurely, be it due to workplace safety issues or environmental issues. It's, you know, the fact is, when we have laws, it's better. Like, honestly, Goldman is not quite as bad because Dodd-Frank, as weak as it is, as many times as it's been weakened legislatively or by Jerome Powell at the Fed, we do have like some laws and they're somewhat being enforced, and there's some positive signs on some of Biden's regulatory picks. So we have some rules. Right now on Facebook, we have no rules. So that's why they're particularly dangerous. But there are a lot of laws on the books that the Justice Department could be applying, that the Internal Revenue Service could be applying, the rest of the Treasury Department could be going after, the Securities and Exchange Commission. And the more we enforce these laws, the more we bring rich people into compliance with the law, the better off we will be. And it's also can be a virtuous cycle. Not everything has to always get worse. The more we make rich people follow the law, the easier it is to get the next rich person to follow the law. And they might be like, you know, I don't want to take that risk. My, you know, I'm only worth $300 million, you know? It might be okay. I might not have to do this sleazy thing, which can get me to $600 million. And so we can make change, but we have to pay attention and apply political pressure all year.
And this is where I think, you know, Biden talking about, you know, investing more money in the IRS to go after these tax cheats, no matter where they are. Because ultimately, the reality is by them getting to cheat us out of taxes, that means our kids don't get the kind of education they deserve. We don't get to invest in early childhood education or you know, college or vocational education. On the other end, we don't get to expand Medicare. We don't get to do all of the things that we need to do, infrastructure, human infrastructure stuff. We don't get to do any of that stuff because, well, you've got these cheaters among us who are hoarding, and we seem to be okay with it. And this is where my frustration is, because this ain't new. We've been talking about this stuff for decades now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a genuine culture of corruption among elites in this country because they've gotten away with it. And if your strategy works over time, it's like if you watch sports, you know, in basketball, they're now going to try to cut down this year on some gimmicky plays where people like kind of induce fouls by the defense, where it's a really artificial, obvious move. But until you actually crack down, players like James Harden and Trae Young are going to do things that just don't look natural because that's the incentive structure. And so the only way to change the behavior of rich people is to give them a reason to change. They need to feel threatened. They need to feel like they have to follow the law.
Yeah, we got to keep the pitchfork near the door. Or as my friend Rich Ojeda says, we need to eat just one of them.
Yes, that would be a good idea.
Because ultimately, we need the investment. Because look, right now we're bickering over numbers. Nobody knows what's in this Build Back Better plan because we're still talking about numbers. We're fighting over numbers, and nobody goes 2.1. Sounds like an auction, and still nobody knows what's in this damn thing.
Right, because the goal of the bill isn't to spend money. The goal of the bill is to address massive problems in this country, be it, you know, the lack of affordable child care to, you know, the climate change. And yeah, there's been a complete failure of messaging, because there's been kind of a politicization of the discourse, where it's all about ups and downs and Senate process, rather than who's for good, who's for bad, who are you fighting for? And that's definitely something the Democrats.
That's an excellent point, Jeff. An excellent point, because the Democrats are fighting over numbers and academic stuff, as Republicans always fight over narrative, the good and the bad. I like how you put that, because I think this is where Democrats need to take a page out of their playbook and talk about narratives, talk about how this bill is going to make people's lives better, and get their behinds out on the road and sell this thing in a way that's going to force Manchin and Sinema and the rest of them on board. Start twisting some arms if you have to.
Yeah, absolutely. And they should be talking not about how this will or will not help in the midterm elections. They should talk about how it's going to help people. I think people can make the connection to the political case, but that is not the job of politicians. Too often sound like pundits rather than people trying to lead the country in a better direction.
No, you're absolutely right. It's one of those things where, you know, we know that if people are feeling the economy is doing well, people are feeling confident, they're going to stick with the incumbent. But if you've got nothing to say, hey, look, this is how we made your life better. It is going to be a very, very interesting year next year. So last question I've got for you, because as we are bickering over these numbers, as someone like Manchin steps on the back of his boat and lectures about how we just can't possibly afford it, do you see it getting through?
I think something will happen. I mean, honestly, I'm more concerned about Sinema. I think Manchin's the opposite of a policy wonk. I don't think he has well-reasoned, well-thought-out ideas. I think there's various corrupt aspects of his life, but deep down, I actually kind of think he wants Biden to succeed. And like, it is admittedly true that he is representing a state that is a very difficult state for the Democrats to win. And we can talk about the reasons why, but at this point in time, it is true. The Sinema thing is just so scary.
So bizarre.
I just don't know if she's running for re-election, despite being, you know, a generation younger than Manchin. And I just worry that if she like wants to live a life of vineyards, Fox News, and the occasional lobbying gig, like I'm worried about Sinema.
That's a good place to end it. Jeff, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Jeff Hauser, Executive Director of the Revolving Door Project there at the Center for Economic Policy Research. Check out their website, therevolvingdoorproject.org. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.